thought I'd just kind of recap a few things that have come up and maybe also talk a little more, just a bit, about the fourth kind of karma, the karma that leads to the ending of karma. Because we've talked a lot about skillful action, unskillful action, and how to hold it in the present moment. And, you know, I think probably driven home the point that what we do does make a difference. that we're not a helpless victim to past actions or the ways of the universe. That we can also focus on things that lead to long-term happiness, well-being, rather than just one-time short-term hits of a little bit of happiness, gratification. So a lot of this kind of falls under the practice of right effort. The Buddha describes right effort as part of the Noble Eightfold Path. And essentially, right effort is the abandoning or preventing of unskillful, unwholesome actions, states of mind, and the developing and maintaining of those that are skillful that lead us in a positive direction. And that in and of themselves, those kinds of that kind of effort will lead to, you know, really positive results. We'll realize and experience the fruits of good karma, skillful vipaka, skillful results, pleasant results. If we also want to take it further, we can. We can also practice all of these aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path with the goal, with the intention of ending completely the cycles of suffering, the cycle of samsara, cycles of samsara. We just have to establish that intention, establish that goal in our minds, establish that possibility. And then using our understanding, right intention, developing the mind in wholesome ways, right action, how we express that, right speech, right livelihood, how we engage with the world, right effort itself, practice of remembering to do this, right mindfulness, bringing ourselves into the moment so that we can know our experience, what's happening in the moment, and the practice of concentration, right? Samasamadhi, the stilling, the distilling, the clarifying of the mind for maximum penetration through insight into how all of this keeps on happening and how, if we want to, we can stop the cycle. So it's a skill that we learn, you know, through consciously engaging with it and really seeing not only the actual actions that we're taking and the quality and the results that they have, seeing that and engaging in that right effort, but also looking at how we're doing it, how it's done, how it actually works, the process, what Ajahn Jeff would refer to as the process of fabrication itself, fabrication, creation of conditions, skillful and unskillful, sankhara. So that we're engaging in that, you know, the creation of unskillful, the understanding of and letting go of unskillful fabrications, creations. And we're seeing how that happens. What are the factors of mind that are involved in the process of fabrication. These are mental qualities in and of themselves. They're also part of the conditioned realm. In a sense, they're these qualities that we use, the tools that we pick up, are also fabrications, skillful fabrications, subtle mental fabrications. The two, there are a number of them, but two primary ones that we engage with, and we've talked about them today, but just to bring them into focus, are what we call intention. Talked about that, you know, the movement of mind towards something, to engage with something, to create something, that impulse to act, the will, the volition, different words for that mental intention to move. That's one aspect of fabrication. And then another very important one, talked about it, haven't really named it quite so clearly, is yoniso manasikara, wise attention. The quality of attention itself is the mental factor. Wise attention is, or appropriate attention, is the one that is to be developed as a skill. So these are the two mental factors that we pull up, we engage with, we bring up for use in the process of skillful fabrication, intention and attention. So we establish the intention for skillful creation, fabrication of mental states that are wholesome, skillful, and leading in the direction of liberation. And we apply our attention to that process, to developing those skills, those qualities, asking the right questions of ourselves, like, what, when I do it, will be for my long-term benefit and happiness? What, when I do it, will lead to release, to peace, to relinquishment, to letting go? What do I do that causes suffering? What do I do that leads to the end of suffering? Asking those questions is using your attention, skillful attention, to hone in on the right questions to ask. So bringing those qualities, those mental qualities, into consciousness, so that when we're doing that, when we're using those qualities to direct our practice, to direct our experience, spiritual development, we see that that's what we're using. We know it. We're doing it consciously, with awareness, clarity. So we learn how the process works. You know, not just that the process creates certain causes or certain conditions in the mind, but we see how it works. We also, you know, this is also the place where we can start turning our attention to more of the development of insight. You know, we have the practice of samatha and vipassana, calm and insight, the development of tranquility is an intentional activity that we can bring by focusing appropriate attention on the right object to help still the mind, creates a very clear space to work with. We use that to further our investigation, to develop insight, primarily along the lines of the three characteristics of experience that are part and parcel of all of our experience. The characteristics that we can really focus on and understand in increasingly deep ways, you know, starting with just an intellectual understanding all the way through experience in daily life to deep penetration at the very depths of experience in deep states of meditation. We haven't talked about that a lot, this, because we've been focusing on more of the karmic process, but the characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta, the characteristics of all conditions, all physical conditions, mental conditions, that are inconstancy or impermanence, transitoriness, changeability, anicca. The essential unsatisfactoriness, the dukkha, with all of those creations. And the essentially, the fact that we can regard all of our experiences under the characteristic or with the characteristic of not self. Of course, these teachings and exploration of these teachings are, you know, many day longs worth of reflection. So we're just touching on that right now. But it's the deep understanding, you know, essentially that an exploration of the fact that all of our experience is constantly changing. Even the good qualities that we create are subject to change. They take attention and nourishment and effort to sustain even the highest, most positive states of mind that we can fabricate, that we can create. Even the states of deep concentration, deep bliss, that are based on letting go and release. In terms of themselves, they are fabrications. Their constructions based on intention and appropriate attention. They're incredibly skillful states. They lead in the right direction towards release and liberation. And that's the whole part of, you know, the whole Eightfold Path is skillful fabrication. As we were alluding to with Stephen's question earlier, there is a point, though, where even the most skilled practitioner, meditator with deep insight along the path will also start to realize that even the most skillful fabrications and the ones that we have to engage with on the path to liberation, even those are part of the realm of conditions. As good as they are and as much as we will pick them up and practice with them, they are not in and of themselves the final goal. So with deep, deep practice, purification of the heart, developing of the skills of meditation, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, we are using our ability to see how we fabricate these very subtle, peaceful states of mind through that constant process of intention, skillful attention, appropriate attention, creating these incredibly subtle, beautiful, skillful states of mind. And at some point in our investigation, we see that it takes engagement, effort, and a conditioned quality of intention to sustain that, to maintain that. It won't last on its own forever. It takes effort and intention and attention to keep it going. It may last for long, vast, long periods of time, still a condition. And even in that subtle sense of fabrication, there's going to be a hint of dukkha, a hint of unsatisfactoriness. It's just part of the process of fabrication itself. So we're looking at this process of fabrication, of creation, of even skillful mental states, and we're seeing that as wonderful as they are and as skillful as they are, and as much as we need to do them, it's not complete release. It too is subject to change. When we see that deeply, we start to really mature the practice of letting go. Because all along the way, we've been practicing letting go, and we can see how stopping the process of certain kinds of fabrication is really useful, particularly the unskillful ones, the harmful ones. We see how we can let go, relinquish, discontinue, hand over that process of creating things, because we see the results of unskillful ones. But we're still engaging in creating skillful ones. So we learn how we create, we learn how to not create. And then we realize that we can even let go of creating of the skillful ones. That same process of relinquishment, release, can be applied to the process of fabrication, of skillful fabrication itself as well. It's very subtle because it's very easy to get absorbed into states of meditative bliss, concentration. And the Buddha says, hey, it is, that's one of the allowable kinds of indulgence. But if we keep up with the practice of insight and investigation, we realize, we can sense that subtle dissatisfaction, the subtle sense of it's not there quite right. It's still holding on to something. Clinging is the basis for suffering. Holding on to things is the basis for suffering. Whether it's unskillful ways, old ways of doing things in a very coarse sense, or whether it's very subtle ways of holding on to certain experiences that are very skillful, blissful, leading in the right direction. If there's clinging, if there's holding, there's suffering. That's the second noble truth. So we learn to let go of even that. Upasaka Gi, she was a very advanced practitioner, a lay woman in Thailand, who was very skilled, very practiced. Most people considered her an arahant, fully enlightened. And she has just a lovely way of very, very direct teaching. And basically it was sort of like her description, her way of stating it was, if, you know, you just keep letting go in your practice. Whatever arises in your meditation, you let go of it. It arises, you don't hold on to it, you don't cling, you let go of it. Then, when you think you've finally released and you finally let go, let go some more. Then you think, okay, I've really completely let go. Let go some more. There's that thought, I've let go. That thought is still clinging. It's just a continual process of realizing more and more the subtle levels of clinging that happen in the mind until there's nothing more to let go of. And then the potential for opening to the unconditioned, that which is apart from the realm of causes and conditions, has the opportunity to manifest, to become apparent, to see. That's the ending of kamma. You've stopped, essentially, the process of the mind moving with intention that creates becoming, creates birth, both in the literal sense and in the ongoing experience of birth in this present moment, the birth of becoming, you know, the birth of experience, the birth of the sense of self, the birth of suffering, the creation of suffering, all just stops. And the unconditioned is what becomes manifest. It's not annihilation, it's not a blotting out, a complete ending, but it's a shifting from the state of confusion, illusion, delusion, into the state of understanding, of complete extinguishment of the creation of suffering. It's what the Buddha calls nibbana, nirvana. So that's the kama, that practice. This is the Eightfold Path. This is the kama that leads to the end of kama, through that eventual letting go of all action that creates becoming. So whether you're talking about, you know, kind of the internal psychological level of rebirth, creation of suffering, how we do that on a moment-to-moment basis, or whether we're talking about the round of rebirths in samsara over time, over many lifetimes, it's the same process. We learn how to do it on this individual, simple level, and the same process applies on this more grand level of death and rebirth. So that's the potential if we want to take it that far. You know, it's the good thing about this practice, the Dhamma, is it's suitable for all of us at many different stages of where we're at, what we want to do. Create good kama, abandon the unskillful, experience the results and the fruits of that, leads to a much more peaceful, skillful, harmless life. And we dedicate it to the kama that leads to the end of kama, the full liberation potential of the path. We can do that too. So it's all good stuff. So I think I'll leave that for now and open it up for, we have just maybe 10 minutes more that we can have some final questions.
Is the aspiration to let go of all suffering, your own suffering, the suffering of all beings, both? I mean, since it's no self, ultimately, what are we? That's what I'm asking.
A few layers there. We have to develop the skill on an individual level, the level of our own personal experience, personal in air quotes, experience. Only when we see the experience of suffering, the cause of it, the path leading to it in our own individual experience, and realize the ending of it for ourselves, can we understand how we might be able to help others to do that as well? We certainly can have the aspiration to help in any way that we can. You know, obviously there's traditions that take that ideal of helping others and hold that in the highest esteem, right. You know, the Bodhisattva vows. It's all good stuff. you know, to put a qualitative measurement on it, one's better than the other, or one's more possible than the other, it's, you know, it's like, that's beyond my, you know, ability or interest. I feel it's good enough to be able to say, I want to end suffering, I have to learn how to do that myself, and I'll help as many people along the way as I can. I don't know beyond that, you know. A lot of philosophical kinds of things start to move into the picture.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing You're coming from your silent retreat, so I value silent retreat much, mm-hmm. so I appreciate you being here for us. I recently heard the connection between, is it Chaitana and Chitta?
Chaitana, intention.
Chaitana and Chitta mind.
Chitta mind, uh-huh.
If I was wondering if you could speak about your knowledge about that, because I found it interesting in how it helped clarify intention, especially conscious and unconscious of things.
Mm.
No?
Not quite sure what you heard somebody say. I mean, chaitana, intention, is just that quality that we've been talking about all day, you know, that it's a mental factor. The will or the volition, the process of mind that precedes action. Chaitana, it's a factor. Chitta is just generally the word that refers to the broad aspect of mind or heart in itself. The process of awareness, cognizing awareness, sometimes consciousness, but that gets stickier in the Buddha's definition of consciousness, but some people will use it in that sense. So all activity of mind, all activities of mind can be known. Chaitana, intention, any of the mental factors, attention, intention, can be known through the process of awareness, through citta. I'm not sure, what it was that you were hearing, or
I can't remember it very clearly myself. But is it possible to have mind, to have thoughts without intention?
Yeah, I think, we're starting to move into kind of subtle definitions and use of words. Yeah, because now you're using the word mind synonymously with thoughts. And, thoughts are, artifacts that can appear and arise through awareness. Thoughts, we talked about those earlier today, are just kind of verbal manifestations of certain kinds of mental activity. Thoughts can be known in awareness just as any other activity that occurs in our experience can be known through awareness, through citta, through mind. Mind, citta, is that global, overall, receptive quality of knowing. One last question, if there is.
Thank you for all day's very fruitful lecture and sitting. I benefited greatly. My question was that I don't know myself very well, and I try very hard to know myself, but all the conditions and karma make me blinded to possibility of knowing myself fully. So so even if I concentrate on making good intention that will lead to a good karma or good action, I won't be sure. So wouldn't that be better for me to rather concentrate on deepening my understanding of how interconnected we are, how emptiness we are, instead of karmic actions? Because to me, it's futile. I mean, I'll try, but it just like maybe just understanding or loving each other or feeling more connected to the world will kind of more naturally lead me to doing better things for myself and others.
Well, I think that you're just not realizing that the intention to do good things or to I mean, you phrase it as understanding the interconnectedness, but seeing how we all affect each other, how we can affect each other, the potential for the goodness that we can bring into the world by paying attention to the world around us and how we are. That's all good karma. That's all creating. That's good action. So you're actually doing it without realizing that you're doing it, if that's your intention. All actions with intention, including being kinder, working towards the goodness in the world, relating to each other as beings that are sensitive and how we affect each other, all of that is establishing qualities of mind that are skillful and will lead to good results, which is all that karma is.
I guess I'm referring to my lack or little of my faith in believing that I can do, I can cause good intention to the fruition, or whatever it is.
Have you ever done anything that's good or generous that you can see had a result?
Taking care of my cats.
Have you ever given something to somebody and seen how they react to it? How do they react?
Of course, they look happy and then they thank me.
Yeah. So you just have to learn to really focus your attention on those kinds of things, because that's having done something good that has a good result. That's realizing and seeing the results of your past action. All we have to do is allow ourselves to see that. We get lost. You know, we get confused. We get lost in our own obstructions, hindrances that arise, the confusion, the lack of clarity. But if we have the intention to really bring that to consciousness, you know, we can do that. And just by reflecting on those little ones, those little things, will help develop a sense of faith that it can be done. You have to reflect on it, though. You have to remember it to develop that sense of confidence, you know. Because that's what faith really means, you know, is more, I think, in the Buddhist sense, is confidence. It's not blind faith or belief, but it's a sense of, okay, you know, I don't understand completely how it works, you know, and I haven't experienced the full potential of how it works, but I can reflect on the little bits, the little pieces that I've done at various periods in my life. I can see where I did something good and it resulted in a good action. You know, or a good result, you know. And that will, if I reflect on that, if I bring that up consciously, then that establishes a sense of confidence. Okay, let me do that again. And let me do that again and again. And let me do it a little bit more. And that's where real faith develops.
So my last comment would be, I don't have to get lost in this notion, in that grand scheme, we don't know whether our action causes good karma or not. We just do things that we believe are good, however small or...
Yeah, I mean, at first, based on what some of the teachings say, if you kind of trust maybe a little bit what the Buddha talked about, then you pick up some of those practices that lead to wholesome results, at least that the Buddha says would, even if you don't know it for yourself. And then you use your own discernment, even if it's just a teeny little bit of wisdom, to look at what you did and what the result was. And then that little bit will give you just a little bit more confidence. Okay, that worked, so I'll keep on doing it. And yeah, don't worry about the big scale, the ending of all human suffering, whether what you're doing or not is going to, you know, create the causes and conditions for sustainable world peace. You know, that's stuff that will come if it comes. You concentrate on what you can do and what you can know right here and now.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I think we can end it for the day there. It's just a little bit after 5. So maybe just to sit for just a moment, quietly, and let it all wash through. I'm just going back to that notion that somewhere along the way, we must have done something good to create our being here right now, today. A lot of causes and conditions coming to fruition. And also just to consciously dedicate any goodness that has come from participating today to engaging, to examining the mind, to stilling the mind, to creating more understanding, dedicating that for our future benefit, development of the path, and for the benefit of all those that will be coming in the future that we might have contact with. Setting that kind of dedication of the goodness from this kind of practice is a very powerful tool. It's a strong effect on the mind. So take a moment to do that and to appreciate with gratitude and dedicate any goodness to the teachers that have brought the teachings of the Buddha into our present day. I think for myself of the closest teacher that I have affiliation with, Ajahn Pasano, abbot of our monastery, his teacher, Ajahn Chah, who brought this style of practice into our world in the modern day. Other very skilled teachers like Ajahn Jeff, I've talked a lot about from his teachings and his explanations today. Many other luminaries of the time. Just to acknowledge that sense of gratification and appreciation, gratitude and appreciation for their presence. Thanks to everyone for an incredibly fruitful day, at least from my viewpoint. Very enjoyable for me. Excellent questions. Excellent comments. Thank you.